Must have this thing. And our speaker tonight is from Fredericksburg, and excuse me, it's Mathiah?
Mathiah.
Okay. Help me welcome Mathiah.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Mathiah. Hi, guys. Thank you for having me come out, and sorry to you guys, because, you know, my story's not that special. There's not a whole lot, but I was actually thinking earlier today about you guys, and just, I've been meeting with a lot of guys. I had a lot of guys recently ask me to sponsor them. I've got 5 guys right now, and that is great, right? There's really good sobriety that can come from that. But it scares me a little bit because I don't know what's coming. One of the things that I've seen in other people when I got here was, you know, God puts people in my life to kind of help me and make sure I'm busy and staying connected, especially if there's something coming. So maybe there's something coming, or maybe deeper serenity or something is coming, you know. And so because I've been able to be present and continually working the steps with these guys, I've been having more aha moments lately. You know, when we first get in here, we really have to work like our life depends on it, because it really does. I've been here for a little bit now. My sobriety date is January 14th, 2010. I always do that. I don't know why. Dyslexic. Anyway, so in January, I'm going to have 10 years, and that's wonderful. You know, and when I got here, I had to work like my life depended on it. But I'll tell you that over time, maybe it is easier, but I still have to work like my life depends on it. And when I swing one way or swing the other way and give in to selfishness and self-centeredness, like I do because I'm human and not perfect, you know, God seems to pull me back, you know? And if I pay attention to those signs, I get pulled back in the right direction. A lot of times it's sponsee, you know, or someone else. Countless times I know my sponsees are saving my life, you know, because I can easily go back to my thinking. It just comes so naturally. This is relying on me. I am a big proponent of resting on my laurels. I will go back to, I've worked so hard, so now let me kick my feet up for a little bit, you know, and I've heard people describe that as, you know, trying to, you know, you're working the steps, you're going up a down escalator, and when you stop walking, you're going down, you know? And it really can be like that. So I get pulled in with different things, you know? And one of the big things that I was thinking about earlier when I was thinking about you guys is one of my aha moments lately is how seriously, and you've probably heard it already, that service work is important. It's not uncommon to hear that from someone who's in the program and doing the stuff. But lately, I have found, like, I know there's one guy that I'm sponsoring right now. It's my newest sponsee. He could have 10 years of sobriety right alongside me because he came in when I came in, and we were running buddies for a good year and a half until I moved out of the area. And I was talking with him recently, you know, one-on-one time, like, and how it came up, I'm not exactly sure, but why am I here and why did he go back out, you know? And I don't know the specifics, but it just, something clicked because, like, yes, you know, we've got the step work, right? And that's definitely critical. And I really hope I talk a lot about that tonight. And getting connected to God, and definitely God is the one that keeps me sober. It's not me. You know, I do other stuff, but God's the one that keeps me sober. But the service work is just, for some reason, like, it doesn't seem like it should matter, you know? But it does get me out of being selfish because I'm helping someone else or helping the meeting or keeping the meeting going or just being here and being present. But my it gets me to those meetings, you know? Like, I can go in to a meeting, you know, because I want to be there easily. Yeah, if I want to go to a meeting, no problem, I'm there, you know? But when I don't want to go to a meeting, service work kind of twists my arm, you know? And it's when I don't want to go to a meeting that I really need to be there, you know? Whether I need to share or whether I just need to be around people, seeing that it's still working. So it's one an aha moment. Like, I knew service work was important. I am very active. I've always been really active because the people that I knew or met in the beginning, they were all doing stuff. Setting up meeting early. They'd get there hour or two beforehand, set it up, maybe go to dinner, you know, come back. That was always, I was always around seeing that. And then, I mean, the people that seemed to stay sober and around, they were all doing stuff. So it's not that I didn't see it. And then also, I just started doing it too, you know. And so, you know, what separates me from the guy who went back out again, there's a lot of things. But for some, if I am staying with something to do in AA, I'm staying busy and I'm staying in the meetings, which keeps me connected to you guys, which keeps me connected to my higher power, because you guys are connected somewhere. So, you know, not, you know, I don't, maybe I'm preaching to the choir, you know, but it's just one of those things that lately for me has just stood out. The other thing I wanted to mention before I do, I'm going to tell you my story. Don't worry. I'm going to tell you my story, but, I was thinking too, like, you know, I'll tell you my story and all the things and I'll pick the pieces that seem relevant to tell you, cause I can't tell you the whole thing. Right. But you won't really know why those things are relevant until later. And the reason what I wanted to do real quick is make sure I talk about God and the steps. And I did talk about service, but like, I grew up religious. And for me, it was hard when that thing of God concept came up that it would solve my problem, right? Because I was raised religious, so I should have already solved that problem, you know? And I'm a smart person, so it didn't seem to me like, you know, I thought I had already tried something like that, so it didn't seem like it would work. And to get me connected to a higher power or God, whatever you want to call it, however it works for you, that was the key, because I could connect to something. It didn't have to be what I grew up with. I didn't have to go back to a belief that I had at one point or a misunderstanding, as I like to think of it now. I was raised in a religious home, and I went to private school for 7 years of my adolescence. And, you know, I still to this day think that I learned it wrong, because they were trying. They were trying to instill in me good quality values. And I heard the parts that I disliked and remembered those things as being, no, this isn't going to work, you know, or whatever it is. Maybe if I went back to a learning with a sober mind, it would be different. You know, maybe I would hear a different thing. And I've been to church since. And I hear a lot of AA principles or spiritual principles there. You know, it's not, we didn't make this stuff up, you know, we borrowed it. And, so I do, if I'm in the right spiritual place, mindset wise, going to church or something will, you know, I'll be able to pull what I can use. But the reason why I bring up God or higher power is because, like, that is why I stay sober today, is a connection to a higher power, different than I had ever experienced before. You know, I had experienced religion, and that, however it was as a kid, that's how I experienced it. But today I trust my higher power today, you know? For me, I had to get down to one simple thing. This is for me. One simple thing that made it work for me. And for me, the definition I have for my higher power is that he will never leave me. And that stems from my biological dad leaving when I was 5. A lot of that has to stem from that, but it just has an impactful meaning for me. You know, however it works for each person, they're going to have what works, what makes sense for them. But for me, it was easy to minimize to one thing that I could be, this is true. And from there, I was able to grow and add attributes or run up against a problem, bang my head against the wall enough and go, all right, maybe I need to try to stop doing it my way and let me see if, you know, if God can take care of this one. And when it worked out, when I got out of the way and it worked out, I realized that it was something, you know, moving forward that I could give to God again, you know, give to him to solve and whatnot. And it's just been trial and error, really. You know, one simple thing that I could rely on in trial and error. And for me, that has worked. Because, you know, in religious, there's a lot of times there's like the revengeful God or some of the other, there's other ones that just don't work for me. So I just needed something. And I feel like I do have like a personal connection, which I didn't ever, growing up, I didn't think that was something real. Doesn't seem like realistic. And logically, because I'm a smart guy, I didn't think that would, you know, why would a God want anything to do with me, you know? Or why would a God waste time or energy, however you want to spin it in your head that works, that, you know, on me? But today I do feel like I have answered prayers, you know? And when I connect, it means something. I'm not a groveling mess to a higher power. It's another thing that's really important for me. I'm not, like I said at the beginning, I'm not perfect. I'm selfish still. I want what I want when I want it still to this day. I'm still learning. And I'm also not that great at praying. I don't remember throughout the day, still to this day. Early on, like I said, early on, I would do it. I would pray all throughout the day because if I didn't, my head was just crazy, you know? And my head's not crazy like that anymore if I stick with this thing. But anyway, for me, it's simple. Like, I pray a third-step prayer when I remember in the morning on my knees. I used to not do it on my knees. I thought that was a groveling also. What I found out was that humbled myself. It didn't do anything for God. It doesn't help God. It humbles me. It reminds me that my ego, you know, and all that, for some reason, that made a difference. And I had to do it first to actually see that that's what I was getting from it. I didn't realize that at the beginning. But, you know, all that's well and good. A higher power, one that I can trust. The key problem here for me, for a hopeless alcoholic, someone selfish and self-centered, is how to get connected to that higher power. And that's where the steps come in. Because if I knew how to have this kind of connection with a higher power and do it, and I would do it, then I didn't need AA. I didn't need the steps. I wouldn't need any of that. But I couldn't or wouldn't or whatever it is. This, I couldn't do it. Because, like, again, I was raised with something that should have worked. And it works for a lot of people. But it didn't work. So the steps get me connected to a higher power. And the book talks about it a lot. It's in there a bunch of times saying, like, here's the solution. God, this is how you get there, the steps. You know, and all the stories in the back of the book are different people's words on how they did that, really. You know, if you want to get sober, like I got sober, like I had to do the steps. And I did fight it for a while. And finally, was able to get worked all the way through. And I've had, I would say, multiple probably spiritual experiences, but two, one of like the educational variety like we talk about, that took a long time, but I was able to see these results happen over time. And then there was another one that was really profound, and that was when I actually had what I told you guys about with like figuring out what my God, like a defining characteristic, and I was able to find that. And the way I found that, and it was really profound, is when I worked the steps with a new sponsor that I had gotten in a rapid succession, really kind of like what the book talks about. And I was able to have like a sudden spiritual experience. And it's not like I was new to the steps. Like I had already done a lot of the steps. I hadn't really done 9 yet. I hadn't really made amends. I think at that point I had made 1 amends and 1 apology, because at one point I didn't really know what that was, so I apologized to some people, you know. I had made 1 amends for my grandmother because she was passing, and I had to do it. But then at that point moving forward, working the steps in a rapid succession before I had even made amends, I had a spiritual awakening. And I think, you know, what the book talks about in Bill's story and how it shows up in my life is, if, you know, when we talk in the book, there's the 10-step promises, which are my guarantee that I'm can stay sober, that I'm placed in a position of neutrality, that I don't have to sit on my hands anymore. You know, I don't have to worry about drinking, really. And what gets me to that point, as far as I'm concerned, with how it talks about in Bill's story, is that once I've worked the steps up to the beginning of 9 and I'm willing to do those steps, willing to do those amends, then I'm at that place of step 10, and I'm guaranteed sobriety. And that is actually when I had that spiritual awakening for myself. And it talks about it in the book, when Bill's story, when he was in the hospital, is when he had his spiritual awakening. So we know he didn't make any amends yet. Anyway, I haven't told you guys much about me, except a lot of really good stuff about this program, right? So I assume that clock is still right, and I'm doing pretty good. You guys already know I was raised religious. I was a selfish kid, selfish in the extreme. If I had had alcohol at a young age, it probably would have been alcoholic-like. But my actions were still alcoholic-like, and I can only see this now. Because, like, you guys probably know, when you drink alcohol, you get right. You feel like, this is who I'm supposed to be, you know? And as a kid, before I had that, I didn't know what right was. So I was always trying to get whatever it was, selfish. I remember going on family vacation. It's supposed to be great fun, you know? But if we weren't doing what I wanted to do, I made everyone miserable, you know? Because it had to be what I wanted, which is, I mean, you're on vacation, you know? Today I can go on vacation and just sort of enjoy wherever I am. A lot of times, you know, we can still be selfish. So as a kid, selfish and self-centered to the extreme. I remember getting mad at my dad for something. I don't know what it was, but I threw a brick at his car. I was mad, you know, like, well, I don't know why. I can't tell you today. Probably wasn't important, but I didn't get my way, you know. I don't know if my first drink was out of the country or not, but my stepdad, and when I say my dad, I'm talking about my stepdad, because my biological dad left when I was 5. He's only now in the picture through sobriety, as a result of sobriety. He's from Ecuador, and we went and visited his family when I was 16, I think. I feel like I might have had a drink before that, but this was a circumstantial situation, where over there, it's not that big deal. It's not a big deal for a 16-year-old or four. I don't even know. Maybe I was 14. It's not a big deal even at 12 and something like that. You know, it's you grow up with that. So when I was there, that was what they did. Here, join us. Have fun. Have a lot. And, you know, my dad, I can see this now looking back, but he would be like, stop giving him that. Stop giving it to him. And he's told me stories since then, so I kind of get a picture in my head. But he's like telling them to stop, and they're like, here, you want more? You want more? And, you know, I want more. Yes, thank you. I don't have a lot of experience, but I wanted more. So, you know, I say that because, like, I don't know if there's an invisible line that I crossed. But more always seemed to be the right answer for me. I remember being a pain on that trip, too. I was a pain during that time. I had no reason to be. Ecuador is beautiful, you know? There's mountains, and we were going on hikes, but we weren't doing it the way I wanted to do it, maybe fast enough or slow enough or being over here when I wanted to be over here, and it was still miserable. And if there wasn't more coming, then I was also not happy, you know? And it's just, I mean, I was a spoiled brat, really, it seemed like. That's why I was acting, even though I wasn't really. But you give me a chance, and I'll show you that side of me, you know? Fast forward a couple of years, because I didn't, you know, that was over there. That was different. You know, my family did try to instill good values in me, and they did succeed. I'll say that they did succeed, you know, but I was still, you know, maybe the black sheep, you would call it, or stubborn and wanting still to get my own way. So there were a couple things throughout my early drinking that really stand out as like I said, I didn't come back and just make myself didn't become a daily drinker. You know, I didn't even have it normally. But at one point in the summer before senior year, it was available here and there. You know, it was fun. But I do remember like trying to plan a time to practice drinking by myself, you know, with my dad's beer or whatever, to try to get good at drinking. I guess, you know, knowing the future, you know. And then, like, I remember a time when I was at a party and the keg ran out. This is early in my drinking. Early. And I'm like, but I'm not done yet. What do you mean the party's over? I don't understand. You know, it just didn't compute. But this is just early drinking. I mean, that follows me for a long time, right? Even to a place where I'm making sure I have a backup somewhere, you know? But, you know, that was... Man, I didn't like to have to deal with all that. That was annoying. Anyway, 18, I threw a party at my friend's house when he and his parents were out of town. That was really nice of me. Like, only thing, and I remember thinking back, the only thing I could picture was being the life of the party and drinking. You know, that was it. That's all I cared about at the time. It didn't cross my mind that maybe his mom or parents or whatever, who were really clean, let's just say, and particular about where things are, would notice that that happened. You know, it didn't even cross my mind that the neighbors would see people in the house knowing they were out of town and be like, why are there people in the house, you know? I don't really know how I didn't really get in trouble for that, you know? I mean, I was 18 still, you know? Everything was available for me to get into trouble. And it, for all intents and purposes, it got swept under the rug. I mean, my parents were pissed, right? But, you know, besides that, like, and my drinking and my party life, which I didn't really have one at the time. That was like the real big was going to be the real big coming out. I'm a cool person with, you know, this. And at that party, I really was that person. You know, they were all like, you're so cool. And then get busted and can't do anything ever again, really, until I went to college. You know, for real, that's what it was. I'm really surprised that I didn't have any bigger consequences. College was nice because I was not under observation anymore. And I say nice because it really got me a chance to really spread my wings when it came to drinking. My first year at college, I was on academic probation. I don't even know. 0.1, or I don't remember how the numbers were. 1 is a really low number, right? Instead of 4.0, 1.0. I think I was under a point on 1.0, which got me on academic probation. I lost scholarships and student loans. I didn't know they could do that. Just didn't even cross my mind. It actually paid off later because I didn't have a whole lot of student loans when I finally said, okay, enough's enough. But I couldn't go to classes. They were in the morning. I'd been drinking all night, you know. So the typical college drinking just added in here because it wasn't anything fancy or special. I got 2.5 years in and completely dropped out. I went to ODU, so that was in Norfolk, and I moved to the beach, got a place with some buddies. They were actually Navy buddies, and at this time I had started smoking weed and maybe getting a little more, you know, some other stuff. And they were in the military, so that was not okay with them at all. So they kicked me out, rightfully so, you know. And then I went and slept on my drug dealer's couch, you know. That was a good place to go. And eventually I left there because he started charging me rent, which I didn't like or appreciate, you know. Why? I'm just on the couch. And eventually lived in my car. And I was working, doing stuff, finding things to do. I'd get fired from jobs, from drinking things, you know. And getting kicked out of school is one thing, you know. That's a consequence, you know. But for me, it was, you know, just a minor thing to allow me to go, keep going, you know. And getting fired from a job was a minor thing, you know. As long as I land back on my feet, and I always seemed to land back on my feet, so it was fine. When I was living out of my car, I actually started making money because it was hard to drink at home and out of my car. And I still did it, though, and that's how I got a DUI, because I just would drink and then I would drive, you know, I was at home. It's crazy, some of the craziness that happened down there. That was actually towards the tail end of my trip and my time in Virginia Beach, but there was another time at New Year's Eve that I had a beautiful, pretty new car. I bought it in like June, so it was like 6 months old. I really wasn't even, I don't even think I was paying the note or whatever. I don't even think I was at the time. But that wasn't the critical part. The critical part was that I had became the designated driver somehow and drove to the party, and then they were ready to go before I was ready to go. They didn't understand how this worked. It's New Year's Eve, you know. So I drove them home. It was only like a mile away. It wasn't even that big of a deal. So I drove them home, and then I left and went back to the party and drank for a while longer. And then when I left, you know, it's only a mile of home, but somehow I crashed my car into a building, you know, like right off the side of the road into a building. It was an auto shop, too, so hopefully, I don't know how that all worked out, because I left the scene. I ran away. And I know deep down today the reason is because I didn't want anything to affect my drinking. I remember sitting in the driver's seat after everything had stopped, right, and I've crashed. I did a 180 and crashed into the building. Anyway, I'm, like, sitting, and I can't get out my door, but I'm, like, there, literally, weighing, you know, hit and run or DUI. So I left, you know. I got lost in the woods for most of the rest of that night. That was before I was living in my car. So I had a place to go. I just couldn't find it for some reason. maybe because I was drunk. Who knows? And I was hiding from any light whatsoever, you know. When I was living in my car and at one point and got a DUI. My car got towed, I found out later. I went to jail. I spent a month and a half in jail because I didn't really understand the legal system and how they might have, could have let me out on my own recognizance. I didn't know any of that. So I didn't really know how to handle myself in that situation. So I stayed in jail for a month and a half. I didn't call my parents. They probably would have got me out or figured out how to work any of that stuff out. And I just didn't, really. There was some logic behind it because I knew they were on vacation and I didn't want to ruin their vacation. But I really just didn't want anyone to know anything, right? Definitely not that I might have a problem with drinking. So I was there until my court hearing. My court hearing came and they're like, go to ASAP or you're going to go back to jail and, you know, stop drinking and driving or who knows, something like that, right? But the biggest thing was go to ASAP or you're going to go back to jail. I didn't do that, by the way. I think I'll forget to talk about it later. I didn't go to ASAP. The next day I left Virginia Beach and moved home. And I didn't go to ASAP until sobriety. And in sobriety, I went to jail for a week and a half, or 2 weeks actually, yeah. In sobriety, you know, cleaning up your past. And that's, I had to do that. I thought for sure they weren't going to put me in jail. But when he was like, well, it happened to be the same judge. I didn't know that's how they did that kind of stuff. But they put me in front of the same judge. And he's like, the last time I was, you were here, I told you if you didn't go to ASAP, you're going to go to jail. Okay, that's what you're doing. And I spent, was supposed to be beach week in jail. That was fun. But that's what he told me we'd do. Amazing. So I got out of jail, you know, time served and ASAP and moved north, moved home up in Woodbridge. That's where my family's from and I grew up in that area. And it just so happened that like a friend was in Virginia Beach when I got out and I was like, hey, I don't know even know why I reached out to this person, but whatever, the stars aligned and I hopped in their car and they took me home, you know. And you know, you would think like you go to jail and they like spend some time like rethinking how you're going to act, you know, because I don't know about if anyone here has been in jail, but it's not fun. It may be a vacation if you're living on the street, but otherwise, like, it's not really that fun. You got to do what they say when they say it, whatever, you know. And the night that I got out, like I said, my car was in an impound lot. Not even an impound. It wasn't even like a police lot. It was just a tow lot. So I broke into my car and I got arrested that same night. The same night I got out of jail. The same morning. It was like 4 hours later, you know. Thankfully, they didn't take me back to jail, but I was just dumbfounded. You know, I didn't think about my consequences. I hadn't really changed my ways. I'm still this person, even though it had been a month and a half without drinking. I'm still doing crazy, selfish things that weren't that smart. But anyway, I moved home, like I said, and from even before this point to this point, 6 months or so, I was getting in trouble every 6 months or so, every time. Possession, this. Thankfully, I never got another DUI. I did, however, get a pretty bad possession with a whole bunch of stuff. They searched my house. I didn't really know how to not let them. They said, we got to, and you don't have a choice. And I was like, okay. I didn't really understand any of that. And they found a counterfeit $100 bill in there, which wasn't even mine, but someone was like, here, we should try to make these counterfeit $100 bills. Hold on to this one for me. Circumstantial, man, you know. In a possession, with intent to distribute or whatever. That intent was there, but I hadn't been at the time. And there wasn't any substances on my property. So I don't even know how they let that stick. But for whatever reason, that was big deal, you know, the biggest charge I had gotten up until that point. So, you know, I was in front of a judge and they're like, you know, we're going to let you out, but you need to go to meetings. This is my first introduction to meetings. And from that point forward is, you know, the start of what looks like the start of my sobriety. However, you know, I remember my first meeting. I related to every single person in the room. This is something that I'm going to have to look at. The next day and all the following days, I picked apart everything because I wasn't done. And I can look back now and say that that's what happened. I didn't know that was what was happening at the time. I stayed sober or dry, really, until my court date. And I had a sponsor, because that's what you do. And he was with me. because that's what you do. And all those charges got dropped down to possession, and that was it. First time offense somehow, because it wasn't the first time, but I don't know. I wasn't going to correct them. So the heat was off. And I know now what happens when you let me do what I want without a solution of AA or in God. It's that I go back to doing what I was doing. Because even though I had 90 days dry with talk of this pretty much every day, not using it or doing any of the things I thought I was doing 1, 2, and 3, but I was, you know, deciding what that meant and doing what I thought what that meant was. So I wasn't really doing it. And I hadn't really committed that I was an alcoholic. It took me a much further time for me to figure that out. I actually was able to decide that I had a problem with drugs before I was even an alcoholic. But anyway, so my charges got lessened. Shoot, I wasn't the problem anymore. You guys, someone else was the problem, you know? And so the fire was off, and I was a slap on the wrist again, free to do what I wanted. And my sponsor at the time, because he was with me, he said he saw it shift in my face. He saw that shift. He didn't tell me that at the time, or at least I don't remember him telling me that at the time. And I remember that today because if I see someone shifting to that way, I'll shake them. Like, hello. Because I don't want to, like, say, oh, I saw it coming, but they went out and killed themselves, drinking themselves to death. Like, I have some responsibility here. Like, at least, let's tell you, even if you hate me for it. But anyway, so he said he saw that shift happen. And, you know, the next day, I just decided not to go to a meeting. And the next day, I decided not to go to a meeting. And after 10 days, I was drinking again. And I remember I didn't start that day thinking I was drinking. I don't even think I started that day knowing that I was going to buy someone else alcohol. But in that process, you know, starting from when I stopped going to meetings, really, but up until the point of when I was buying someone alcohol, they didn't give me a list of what they wanted. I bought what I wanted. And I didn't see that until later, but I bought my alcohol. And I never ended up hanging out with any of them, so I had all this alcohol, too. So it was like perfect situation. I wasn't even working that day. It was just, look at that, you know? And I drank, and I've heard someone else, you know, I stole this from somebody else. But that first drink, it felt like what happens if you drop a match into a bucket of gasoline. It was just whoosh, you know? And I know, I was like, as soon as I had like one drink in me, I was like, why? Like, really dumbfounded. Why have I not been drinking this whole time? I don't understand. I drank like I would normally, more, until 2 weeks later when I was back in jail again with a worse charge. 2 weeks. And that, thank God that happened, because it, as I look back, it was only the walls and the things that got me in trouble that really got me to stop, because I was not going to stop on my own. Even though in those first 90 days when I was in the rooms, I was convinced that I had always decided to drink, that I didn't. It's not that I didn't have control. I decided to drink. What it looked like was, even if I decided, okay, today I'm not, let me not drink today. Okay, good. Okay, no problem. And I'd go about my day and someone would ask if I wanted to go drink. Oh, yeah, let's do that. You know, there wasn't blood oath or any of that, but it was like I would change my mind. No matter the situation or the circumstance, I would change my mind. No matter what's hanging over my head, if the plan already wasn't drinking, I would change my mind to drinking. And I can see that in retrospect, but I couldn't see it then. And when I was new and sitting in the rooms, it always seemed like I would change my mind, and I could stop when I wanted to, but I didn't want to, you know? I'd tell myself that all the time. I don't want to stop now. I can stop when I want to. I'm an intellectual guy. When it becomes a problem, I'll stop, you know. It was a problem for a long time, but I couldn't see that because I was getting that solution. This is me, and I am me drunk and high. That's who I needed to be. Anyway, so where am I at? Somewhere over there. Drank, jail, Grand Theft Auto was the charge. Not like I found this really awesome sports car and decided to steal it. No, I just, as I had done many times in the past, I borrowed my friend's car. This time I didn't tell him that I took it, and he reported it stolen. And when they asked me if I had taken it at that point, I said, no, that was not me. And the police got involved and all kinds of other stuff happened, and I was working that day. And the reason, I even remember this, you know, I wasn't blacked out enough that I didn't remember taking it or that I didn't consider taking it. I considered what it would be to take it, not the consequences, no, but I considered it, and it was to save myself, because at the time I didn't have a license, first of all. Second of all, I didn't have a car, so when I wanted to get anywhere, I had to work, I'd usually take a taxi, unless I had to get somebody else to drive me, right? So I took his car that day to save myself the $10 or $15 taxi ride to work the next day. That was it. And Grand Theft Auto. There you go, you know. That is what I did, you know. It's not like they made up a charge and threw it at me. Like, I legit took his car, didn't tell him I took it, even had chances over and over again to come clean. But at that point, I didn't want to be that person, you know. I didn't want people to think that I was that person. I was that person. I didn't want them to think that I was that person, you know. We put on this front. So anyway, I went to jail for that. In case I forget about coming back to it, as a result of actually working the steps and doing this thing, that charge is not on my record. It got dismissed for reasons that I don't even know. God is the only reason. Because even it was my friend's car, right? So he had every right not to, he could not charge me. But it wasn't his car, it was his parents' car. And they had every right to do so, and they did, up until the court date. And even when they decided, I guess, to be nice and not charge me, the county had spent time and energy and they could have picked it up. My lawyer was dumbfounded when they didn't pick up the case. They just let it go. Probably because they knew I'd be back, you know. Thankfully, I was never back, but they had a reputation. I was going back, you know. When I'm in jail for this particular charge, I had had 90 days clean, sober. My parents had known I'd been going to meetings. My mom comes from an alcoholic family, so she could appreciate what I'd been doing and could see a change, even though I didn't really see one. And when I'm in jail, I did the only thing I knew what to do, which was to call her. And say, please get me out of here. And she said, well, if you go back to meetings, I'll get you out. And I truthfully promised not only myself but her that I would do that, and I would get sober. And that night I was drinking as soon as I was out of her sight. And that was just another sting of alcohol, you know, that we get to see, because this thing is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and no matter how much my willpower, how much things are hanging over my head, you know, and that's with, you know, I fast forward really quick to tell you that charge got let go. But at this time, it was still hanging over my head with Grand Theft Auto felony hanging over my head, court, jail time or whatever that meant. I don't even remember it to this day. I don't remember how much that meant, but I'm sure it was years. Hanging over my head, I had been arrested at my place of work, so they weren't having me back. Lots of things hanging over my head. Dead matter. As soon as I was out of her sight, drinking again. I drank that weekend. I went to a meeting that Monday. I'd gotten a guy to pick me up. And this is an important part because up until this point, I thought I could stop when I wanted to. I thought I decided and always changed my mind that I would drink. And that weekend, that drink, as soon as I got out of jail, that wasn't choosing to drink. That was just drinking. And when I got to Monday and I went to a meeting, I had all this stuff hanging over my head. I'm going to lose. I lost my job. I'm going to lose all these things, right? I've family aren't going to want to have anything to do with me. They already didn't want a lot to do with me before I had started going to meetings. And that was going to happen. And then, you know, jail time, of course, and all this stuff hanging over my head. I went to a meeting because I was broken. And I got an hour of a really good, I'm sure, meeting. And my friend, who was kind enough to drive me to go look for work, he dropped me off near a mall. This was up in Woodbridge, so Potomac Mills Mall. And I had like $30 to my name. And the reason I know that is because I pulled up my phone and I logged into my bank account and saw how much money I had. And that's all I had for the whole week, for eating or whatever. And I walked the freaking mile and a half or whatever it was, went and got the money, walked all the way back, and went into a bar and spent it all on alcohol. And I remember to this day seeing myself walk in there, you know, like it was as if I wasn't doing it. And I needed that experience because, like I said, up to that point, I thought I was in control, and I really wasn't. I had a head full of AA. I had just come from a meeting, you know, I had a lot of reasons to not drink, and I am a strong-willed person. And I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to do any of these things. I don't want to suffer these consequences that I've put in front of myself. It should have been enough, and it wasn't. That day, maybe because of the amount of money I had, maybe because that was the time, I didn't get drunk. Alcohol did not work for me that day. And that was another step in that direction of something that I heard in the rooms that eventually it will stop working. Because up until that point, it worked. It gave me what I was needing or seeking when I drank it. I got relief from me, really, you know, from life, you know, and up until that point. And that day, that didn't happen. I was pretty miserable. I didn't go back to the meeting the next day, but I went the day after that. That is not the start of my sobriety because... like we do, we don't always put ourselves in good situations. And but I did start going back to meetings. I went to meetings for a while. I found a sponsor. I started doing some steps. And this guy, I hope he's doing great. Because, I mean, for real, he wanted me to get it. He was ready to take me through the steps in a rapid succession like it talks about in the book. And that scared the hell out of me. I didn't realize it. I was doing the things with him, and he was like, okay, here's the fourth step. You do this, and then when you finish that, you got this, 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 and this, and you're going to get better, or whatever he said, and that scared me. It really did. And that is how I take guys through the steps now. So I try to at least say, hey, this might scare you, but this is the way to do it. And to try to let them know, like, I was there before. I know this is scary. I did a four-step, and of course, like what happens when we're working on a four-step, we get raw. We get emotional. We get crazy. We're more crazy, if that's even possible, than we already were. And I was that way, and I sat on that for a while. And I sat on that through picking up again. And it wasn't alcohol this time. It was mushrooms. And it was strange because I didn't seek those out. They were in a box in my closet, you know? They were forgotten, and I found them. And I wasn't doing them, so it was fine, and I just, like, was handing them out or something. And I remember there was enough to make some money off of them, but I didn't want to get into that crowd again, so I, like, gave it to someone else, and they got arrested. That deal did not happen the right way. Thankfully, I was enough aloof or apart from it that I could go. I don't know anything about that. Thankfully, God taking it out of my hands. But there was another time Because, like, I don't know why, but we, like, man, how did that happen? Good thing I talked about the good stuff in the beginning. That, it's not 6:30 anymore. Give you the condensed version. I mean, you guys see that I'm a real alcoholic. That's pretty clear. Continuing to drink, even though everything's standing in front of me, and real good reasons for that. I moved out of the area. Like I was saying, I ate mushrooms that day, and at the time, I didn't consider it a relapse. And for me, that's what I needed, because I stayed around. I think if I had considered it a relapse, I would have went with more, like we do, and who knows where I'd be today. But I didn't consider it. It came later. At some point in my sobriety, I realized I was lying. And I could feel it in here. And I told a buddy of mine first, and then I finally told my sponsor, and I was able to, you know, get right and get back to it. I worked the steps with a guy up in Maryland that I met. I had moved north. And we went through the steps, and like I said, I had a spiritual experience. And I've had a number of sponsors in my sobriety. I don't know if I could count them all right now. Some of that has to do with, all of that has to do with me. They're doing just fine, you know? And it's funny because I want to put this face of who I am and show that to you that I'm this great thing. But with my sponsor, at least, if not more than that, I've got to really show them how human and selfish I really am and tell them really what's going on with my life. Or else I just hide behind it and I don't get the results that we're talking about in here. I've just moved and changed sponsors, or tried to work with a guy and change sponsors. At one point I was changing sponsors because I was trying to find someone who would work the steps with me. It was a concept that it was just baffling. I was like, and I found a guy and we worked rapidly, like I said, and I found a higher power. I forgot to get sober a lot, but the point is that I am not perfect. And when I am working on doing, when I work the steps and I can do the best that I can do. And what happens is I do even just a little because that's the best I can do that day. And God does the rest of it, all of it. The steps are there that don't make sense why they would keep me from drinking, especially before I've done it. It doesn't make sense. But I do these things, and that's like just like opening the door, and then God does everything else. It amazes me how little in the scheme of things that I actually have to do. We talk about this program being simple. It is. But as far as my part goes, so small. And I wouldn't be able to do it if it was relying on me. Thankfully, it's relying on God. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm Sam, alcoholic. Thank you so much for an honest AA talk. That's all we hope for. You know, you don't have